The views expressed on the Cystic Fibrosis Podcast are that of Jerry Cahill and his guests, and not necessarily those of the Boomer Esiason Foundation. Nothing in the Cystic Fibrosis Podcast should be considered medical advice. Such advice can only be given by a physician who is experienced with cystic fibrosis. The Boomer Esiason Foundation, Jerry Cahill, and his guests cannot be held responsible for any damage which may result from using the information on this podcast without the permission of your medical doctor. You're listening to the Cystic Fibrosis Podcast presented by the Boomer Esiason Foundation. Now, here is Jerry Cahill.
Welcome to Jerry Cahill's Living, Breathing, Succeeding CF Podcast program. This show, CF, Living Life Post-Double Lung and Liver Transplant, was made possible through an unrestricted educational grant from the Allergan Foundation to the Boomer Esiason Foundation. Today we'll meet Catherine Norris, 22 years old, from Dallas, Texas, then lived in Spain for 16 years and currently lives in Tennessee. Catherine was diagnosed at 3 months and has always been an active person. A sports enthusiast, including 11 years of dance, roller skating, and swimming, Catherine also enjoys the arts and music, so she is pretty well-rounded. Most recently, due to the progression of CF, Catherine had a liver and double lung transplant that she is recovering from and getting back in the game of life. Hi, Catherine. How are you today?
Hi, I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well. Well, it's great to see you, and congratulations. You're like 2 months post-liver and lung?
Yes. I got it June 29th.
Wow.
So, a little bit over 2 months.
That's great. You look fabulous.
Thank you. I feel good.
Everything's good?
Yep.
Well, Catherine, let's just start. Tell us a little bit about yourself growing up and obviously growing up in Spain, and why did you move there?
Okay, so like you said, I got diagnosed at 3 months old in Dallas, Texas, and they were just not giving me the right treatments. I had Pseudomonas and all kinds of bugs. So my parents made the decision to move to Spain because they're socialized medicine, and my mom is from there. She grew up in Barcelona. So it was just an easy move. We went there, and I lived there for 16 years, and it was great. I lived in a little town in the coast of the Mediterranean, and I loved the lifestyle there. You walked everywhere, so you got a lot of exercise in your daily regimen already, and yeah.
And how is the care over there, the cystic fibrosis care?
Now that I can compare it to the U.S., I'd say since there's socialized medicine, they're not afraid of giving you extra medicines if you need it. So say you need it for a month, they'd give you for a month and a half just in case. And you could see it as a negative, but also a positive. If there's emergencies, you already have it. You don't have to call the doctor and like wait extra days. They're also more aggressive, I think, in the treatments, also due because they have the resources to give you the medicine. But on the opposite side, since the government pays for the medicines, they wouldn't pay for example, Orkambi or all these new drugs that are cost so much for just one patient. They just can't afford that as a country. So it has its pros and cons, like everything.
Okay, and how? Tell me about growing up and going to school and dealing with CF.
Growing up with CF in Spain was like everywhere else, I guess. You do exercise more because you have to walk to school or take the bus, but in my case, I always walked. I also took a lot of extracurricular activities, like my mom always put me in different stuff. She had me swimming for a year. She had me, I started dancing at 6 years old, I believe. Also rollerbladed. All kinds of stuff. We went to the beach every day in the summer, so you ran, you played tennis, you swam, all kinds of stuff.
Pretty active.
Yeah, really active.
So I know you're really into fitness, and you're currently studying to be a personal fitness trainer. And you were always active growing up. What is your goal with being a fitness and trainer, instructor? Or?
Well, I started working out in a gym whenever I got pretty sick back in 2015. I had sepsis, pneumonia, and strep A all at once. And once I recovered from that, that's when I decided to join an actual gym. That was my first time joining a gym. And I was pretty nervous. But then I slowly started working out, looking at workout videos. And that's when I fell in love with the weightlifting, a part of working out. And now that I've progressed so much and I've learned so much, I want to share my experience and share my knowledge, especially with CFers, because I feel like a lot of CFers don't follow the, or take it, how would I word this? They don't know the importance of exercise for CFers. The doctors mention it, but until you physically experience it and physically experience the changes that exercise can provide to the body, you won't know.
And I'm sure it made a big difference in your health once you really started.
Oh yeah, yeah. Actually, you see progression pretty fast. CF bodies are strong. Like, we're strong people. We look weak, but once we start training, we can become pretty strong. And so yeah, I just want to help even non-CFers. I feel like my experience and my journey in life has provided me with a lot of knowledge and life lessons that I can share.
Now, how often, let's talk about pre-transplant. Mm-hmm. How often were you sick and how often were you in the hospital? Let's think about like the two years coming up to transplant.
Okay, so that would be May 2015. After that hospitalization, I probably got hospitalized at least once a year for the 2 weeks of antibiotics, sometimes twice a year, but I never bounced back to where I was prior to the hospitalization of sepsis. I just kept declining slowly. I was still in the dance team. I was in the dancing at Maryville College, so we danced at football games and basketball games, but it was rough. I remember after coming out of the football field after dancing, I would be so lightheaded and dizzy. My coach was ready with the inhaler, but it's something you do it because you love it. But yeah, and then 2017 in May, that's when I got the biggest hospitalization ever. I stayed there for a month actually, and I was ready to take on an internship in Belize, Central America, for interior design. So myself decided to get on 2 weeks of antibiotics just to get me clean, get all the possible infections out of the way so I can go to the internship. And I walked into the hospital in the room air. I was walking on my own, but I caught something in there, and that's what kept me in there for a month. I was on 7 antibiotics. Wow. I was at 15 liters of oxygen at one point. Couldn't even walk to the bathroom from my bed. So yeah, that really hit me hard. And since then, I was on oxygen 24/7. And I did not bounce back, not even half to where I was before.
Now, when you said you went in the hospital in 2017, yeah, and you ended up being stuck in there for a month, what hospital were you in?
I was at UT, University of Tennessee in Knoxville.
Okay. And from there, what happened? I mean, did you get into transplant then, or?
Well, sorry?
Well, I mean, like, you were in the hospital for a month. Uh-huh. At what point did they decide, okay, it's time for you to go on to a transplant?
There was maybe on week two, in the hospital, that's when my main doctor came in and just mentioned transplant. He didn't say I needed one. He just brought it up. And of course, I was pretty upset because myself, as a very active person, I never thought I would be the one getting transplanted. Doctors always say exercise is the best medicine for CFers. And I took that seriously at that point. But I guess I was too far gone, I guess, with my progression. And then one night, I remember, I was just gasping for air. I don't know what happened. I just went in immediate gasping of air, and I needed 15 liters of oxygen. And I remember myself begging for a transplant. So that was the turning point for me. They told me all the great possibilities post-transplant, all the things I could do, all the things I would be able to do again. And I think that was my main motivation to, like, get a transplant and go forward with the journey.
And how did you decide then on a transplant center?
Well, my doctors gave me some options, and the centers surrounding me didn't do a double lung and liver at the same time because I also needed a liver. So that's when we decided on Duke, which is only 5.5 hours away from here, so it's not that bad.
So you went up to Duke, and I guess you had the evaluation?
Yeah, it's a week evaluation, and there's all kinds of tests, MRI, bone density. The first thing was they took like 40 vials of blood from me. And there's x-rays, there's CT scans, there's meetings with social workers, doctors, surgeons, all kinds of stuff. It was a pretty hectic week.
And at what point did they decide that, yes, you need to get a transplant?
Well, they did the evaluation, and then they sent me home. And then every Tuesday, the doctors meet up, and they evaluate your transition, your results. And whenever they found out that I also needed a liver at that point, that's when they decided, okay, you're in your transplant window, which means you're sick enough for transplant, but also you're healthy enough to, like, survive the surgery and move on.
Yeah, because that's double. I mean, if you felt like a lung transplant, you had to have a liver and
Do
them at the same time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, I guess, what happened to your liver? Was that always an issue? Or
It was always an issue in, like, it had some fat surrounding it, and also it was enlarged. But actually, I believe it's like 2% of CFers have liver issues, and I'm the chosen one. I'm the lucky one. And maybe it was 2 years ago whenever they said, okay, like, you have liver cirrhosis, so, like, there's some scar tissue in the liver, stop drinking, like, take a lot of protein intake, which helps the liver. So yeah, I'd say it was 2 years ago. And then when the transplant center and team saw that it was cirrhosis, they just decided to transplant the liver as well. Just for better results in general for the body.
Now, when you went to Duke to be evaluated for transplant, were you still on a lot of oxygen at that point?
It was weird because I was always on either 2 liters or 3 liters, sometimes 4 liters. But my oxygenation was fine at that level of oxygen, but I was always fatigued. Because the main issue why they put me on oxygen was because of my elevated heart rate. It wasn't really the need of more oxygen for my blood. It was to slow down my heart rate.
I see. Mm-hmm. Now, your Duke was 5 hours from where you live. Mm-hmm. So at what point, I guess they listed you had to relocate.
Actually, Duke does it a little bit different in the transplant process. So I got the evaluation, and I went back home to Miraval, and then we got a call maybe 2 to 3 weeks after saying that I was in the transplant window, you're ready to relocate. So for Duke, you have to be at least 2 hours away from the center, and of course we were 5, so we had to relocate to Durham. So my dad and I relocated on October 4th, 2017, and that's when you start the process. So Duke requires for you to do a month long of rehabilitation, so cardiopulmonary rehab, and there you do floor exercises, you do weights, you do the bike, you walk every single day, of course not the weekends, but you have to do at least 23 sessions, and then that's when they list you. So they make sure you're physically fit in a way before they list you, because once you're listed you can get the call the next day. So that's what they do. They also require you to go to some educational classes on how to take care of yourself post transplant, what to expect, what not to expect, what you can do, what you can't do. So
now, how was it knowing that you had to relocate and leave your friends and family? And
I think the hardest part for me was not being able to graduate college with all my friends and walk with all my friends. That's what hit me the hardest. Because my friends always visited me. Of course, it was hard not being able to like drive down the road and see them. But now with technology, we have FaceTime, we talk all the time. But yeah, graduating was the hardest part for me because I was young.
And what was your lung functions prior to transplant? Do you recall?
Prior, it was definitely below 30. It was probably 23-ish. Went down to actually 14 at one point while I was at Duke. Then whenever I got the call, I believe it was at 26.
Okay.
Yeah.
And did you get when you got the call, did you have any dry runs?
I didn't have any dry runs. I was actually in two different lists. So I was in a lung list and a liver list. So for them to coincide at the same time, because it has to come from the same donor, of course, there's less chance of rejection that way. So there were so many little factors that had to come together that I waited from November 1st to June 29th. So like, what's that, 8 months?
Seven months.
I had no dry runs. And they told me to not expect dry runs because there were so many different factors that it would be a miracle if there were dry run, basically.
Yeah. Wow.
I don't know if it was good or bad if I didn't have dry runs.
I had 5 of them.
You did? How did you feel?
It was crazy.
Yeah. I think it would be like just too much of an emotional roller coaster.
Yeah,
I'm already an emotional person. I think it'd go
crazy.
You seem
pretty calm here right now.
Yeah, prednisone.
Yeah, okay. Speaking about emotionally, how did you prepare yourself mentally and, well, physically we know you did the rehab, how do you prepare yourself mentally for a surgery that you're about to undergo for not only lungs, but liver?
Liver, yeah. I think since I had such a long period of time until I got the actual transplant, I had a lot of time to like prepare myself. I think the hardest months were the first 3 months where I was told you need a transplant. I was a wreck. I didn't know how to handle myself, and I went into a little depression too. But once we relocated, I had my head, I was focused on the goal, I knew what I had to do, and I wasn't really that nervous. It's weird to say, people might think I'm lying, but I was calm all the time. Of course, sometimes you have doubts, you have fears of the future, because transplant is not forever. You basically change one disease for the other. I just kept myself entertained. That's why I actually started the personal training certificate, because I had to take a medical withdrawal from college for like a year, and I just got so bored. I just didn't know what to do with myself, and I knew I wanted to do personal training eventually, so might as well do it now where I don't have a lot to do.
So really the exercise is what helped you stay, that was what kind of your extracurricular activity that kept you healthy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And how, you know, the transplant, take us through the call and the transplant.
So I got the call around 7 p.m. So they told us, okay, come to the hospital, to the ER's part. So we went there and they immediately took me into the pre-op room. And that's when they prep you, they like start signing consent papers, and basically you're waiting for them to decide if it's a go or a dry run. So I stayed there maybe, I think they were gonna tell me at 6 a.m. the following day if it was a dry run or a go. So you just wait in this little tiny room. And then it was 6 a.m. They told me it was a go. My mom was already there. My boyfriend drove to town. And as they tell you it's a go, you're going into the OR. There's no waiting after that because the organs are already waiting for you, basically. So Surgery took, they told us to expect a double lung and liver surgery to take around 16 to 20 hours. Yeah, it's a lot of time. But now, of course, I've been told this, I was out. At hour 4, the liver was put in completely. I don't think they closed me before the lungs were in. I think they kept me open. And then at hour 9, the doctors called my parents. And, of course, they were, like, super scared because, like, they're not expecting something to happen at hour 9. And they were done.
Wow.
So, double lung and liver surgery took 9 hours. What they did after the liver transplant, one surgeon did the right lung and another surgeon did the left lung at the same time to reduce time in the OR, basically, and time that the organs were on ice.
Mm-hmm.
So then I was taken to the ICU and I only stayed there for like 3 days. I was kept sedated for, I believe, a bit over 24 hours, and then they woke me up and they immediately made me stand up and start walking. And I don't remember much. I was on so many pain meds. I just remember little flashbacks here and there. But I was taken up to step down on day 3 post-transplant.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, and I didn't, I was really fortunate. I didn't need extra oxygen or dialysis or even a trach. It was pretty amazing.
And how was that first breath? Do you remember?
I do remember that. That's the only thing I basically remember. So they sat me up in the bed. They made the bed into a chair, which I had no idea that was possible. I have a picture of me like with the most fearful face whenever they sat me up for the first time. It's hilarious. So they extubated me, and I don't know if it was because my lungs were so numb because of all the pain meds, but that first breath was amazing. It was great. I remember just saying, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, and just breathing. After the pain meds kind of wore off, that's when I started feeling the pain. And you just feel your chest so tight because, of course, they cut the sternum and some ribs, I believe. But yeah, that first breath felt pretty good. I don't know if that was because I was high or because I have no clue. Anything is better than being intubated for sure.
Yeah. Now let me ask you a question. I'm just curious. Do you think was the pain worse from the lungs or the liver?
That's a good question. I think there were different issues with both. Like, I think the lungs were the most painful because all of the drain tubes that are in there. Between your ribs and my sternum was really an issue for a while. The liver was fine. Just with the liver, it was mostly, I had a lot of water retention and I was so bloated, and between the liver incision and the clamshell incision, my skin was so stretched out. It was so uncomfortable. So it wasn't pain, it was more discomfort. So.
Oh boy.
Yeah, it was something else.
And, wow, here you are 2 months later.
Yeah.
And I really appreciate you spending some time with us and telling us about it. How has the recovery been going? You look fabulous.
Thank you. Recovery was, the first few weeks were tough in the sense that a lot of water retention, some pain. I had a lot of back pain issues due to the positioning on the OR table. They tried a lot of stuff on me. They even tried acupuncture, which was something I had never seen before done in a hospital. The pain management team was great about it. They first tried, the little electro pads that you put on your back and they like zap you. That didn't do much, but then they did acupuncture and that really worked. And then my epidural fell out and they didn't know. So I was on pain for like 10 hours, just like little things here and there that like give you bumps in the road. But recovery was smooth in a sense that I didn't need bigger treatments like dialysis and all that. once I got home, that's when I really started feeling progress in my recovery, because they don't hand you everything. You have to do it yourself, or you just walk to the bathroom, to your room, to the kitchen. So you're more active, and that's the main thing you have to focus on, being active. That's what I've learned. Just working out those lungs, making them expand, pop all the little alveoli's. But yeah, I'm doing great, much better than expected, actually.
Yeah, it's fabulous. Now let me ask you, you know, it's still early, 2 months out, mm-hmm. but do you know anything about the donor family, or who they are?
No.
Have you written a letter yet, or any of that stuff?
No. For Duke, you have to wait a year in order for you to reach out. And you don't even reach out to them. You send a letter to your transplant coordinator, and she sends it to the family, and they decide if they want to respond or if they don't. Now, they can reach out to you before a year. You just can't reach out to them.
Right.
And I'm not sure what I'm going to do. I think it's still early to know what I want to do in with the donor family, which I'm really thankful for, of course.
Yeah.
But it's a touchy subject. It's really touchy and delicate. So I have time to figure that out.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about your support team. I mean, mm-hmm. a support team is extremely important going through, you mm-hmm. know, hard times, or, you know, things of this nature, a transplant. Who was your support team? Who helped get you through?
Well, I moved to Durham with my dad, basically because Duke requires you to have a caregiver 24/7, and he was the one who was in the easiest position to like leave his job for this process. My mom stayed in Maryville because she had the insurance and she worked, but my dad was a great supporter. He's a good sport. Living with a 22-year-old female can't be easy at times. A lot of trips to Ulta, to Target.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Girls love to shop.
Oh, we love to shop. Shopping therapy, or retail therapy, was great this process.
Retail therapy.
Yeah, Amazon is really dangerous when you have Prime. But no, my dad was a great supporter. Of course, my mom's. My boyfriend was amazing. He drove up from Georgia every time he could. My aunt from Dallas, Texas, flew in for my surgery, and she stayed here for 2 weeks.
Wow.
Yeah. So
and family.
Yeah, family.
And boyfriend.
Yeah, and friends. Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, well, I'm lucky. I have a great support system.
Yeah.
And I can really rely on them.
It's very important. So let's talk about, here you are 2 months post-transplant. Mm-hmm. You have a new set of lungs. You got the most beautiful gift of life. You can breathe now.
Mm-hmm.
Your liver's working great. What's next? What's the future hold?
Well, I definitely have to finish college. Depending on how my health is doing, I'll probably start next spring. And I only have one semester left until I graduate, which is exciting. After that, just, I don't know, find a job probably, the personal fitness training. I do graduate Maryville College with a graphic design degree, which can help me in designing cars or like businesses. I haven't thought that far away. I have ideas, but I like too many things. That's the issue. I like to do too many things.
Well, you like to shop, and you like too many things in the shop also.
That's true. That's true. but yeah, I'm definitely leaning towards the health aspect of what I'm learning, and personal fitness and training. Yeah.
Okay. And let me ask you a couple of last questions. Do you have any recommendations for people with CF that may be in need of a transplant, but may be afraid?
It's normal to be afraid. I mean, it's a big, big transition in your life. You basically, like I said, you change one disease, CF, for so many others, so many possible others anyway. Just really think about it. Think about what you want to do. what are your goals and if you believe that transplant is the best for you, go for it. It's normal to be afraid, but you just have to pass those fears and keep your head in the game and mainly focus on the future and what you'll be able to do post. That's one thing that really helped me, is write down all the things I want to do post or I'm excited to do post. That's what motivated me.
Okay, and you're happy?
I'm beyond happy. I'm so happy.
I could see it in your face. That's great. Well, anything else you'd like to say, Catherine?
No, thank you so much for having me. It was great.
Oh, no, this is a pleasure. Thank you. And I'd like to thank Catherine Norris for sharing her feelings on life post liver and lung transplant with CF and being a major inspiration to people with cystic fibrosis and those that are facing a transplant. I'd also like to thank Allergan Foundation for their unrestricted educational grant, which has made this all possible. Remember, there is power in believing. You cannot fail. Thanks, Catherine.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Jerry Cahill's Cystic Fibrosis Podcast. If you would like more information on cystic fibrosis or the Boomer Esiason Foundation, visit our website at www.esiason.org.